This podcast is not safe for work and will feature movie spoilers. It will feature scenes described of a graphic nature. It will contain language which most listeners may find offensive. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is episode 215. I'm your host Duncan McLeish. Welcome to the show. On episode 215 we kick off a first in what will be a three-part series looking at Chan-Wook Park's Vengeance trilogy, starting off with this very first episode covering Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance from 2002. Joining me after the first break will be my guest who's joining me on this three-movie odyssey. It is the phenomenal Liam Rafferty from Scott Liam vs. Evil. Before we get to that though, let's do a bit of a catch-up. We have a four-episode week planned for this week. We are doing this episode, obviously, today. On Wednesday, we drop a bonus review of the brand new Robert Eggers movie that made its way to the UK, The Lighthouse. On Thursday, it is a bonus episode just for all y'all out there. And then on Sunday, it's our Arrow video assortment looking at Demons 2 by Lamberto Bava. So there you are. That is gearing up this week on the podcast Under the Stairs. As for the Teapots Collective, well, we just dropped a brand new episode of Chronicle that came out last Friday. This coming Friday is the next installment of Opera Omnia. I'll be joined with Mr. Watson and we will be sitting down, as we are in this season, looking at Ben Wheatley's filmography. This is the second episode where we're covering his second film, Kill List. Now, that episode is already recorded and let me just say in advance of it dropping, it's a phenomenal conversation. We chat for just over 2 hours and get really in-depth into what we think the movie might be trying to put forward as an idea. We also get into certain criticisms about the quote-unquote elevated horror or prestige horror terms and what they mean. And did they exist before modern kind of movie releases in the last 3 or 4 years or so? Could we track back these things to movies like Kill List? So there's a great conversation. I hope you join us. The only way to check that out though is to make sure you're subscribed to the Teapots Collective and all the places that you usually listen to your podcast. Now, talking about all the places that you would usually listen to your podcast, I touched on this on yesterday's episode. I just want to reiterate it on this. We recently changed our RSS feed for the show. Now, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you have managed to find this episode some way online. But if you are checking this out on SoundCloud because your usual podcatch device has not picked up an episode since last week, then there's a good chance it's because the RSS feed has not made its way to updating your capture device of whatever that is. So suffice to say, it should all be resolved in the next week or so. But yeah, we are making sure that everyone is singing from the same hymn page and everything is coming off the SoundCloud feed now, as opposed to the kind of antiquated versions that I was using in the past. So if it's running a bit behind, do not worry. If the show notes look a bit different, that's great. It means they're formatted correctly, which makes me fucking happy. And if you can now see the chapters that I've been putting in the shows, that makes me even happier. That's all the work that I do in the background that you guys don't see. And it looks like it's finally starting to pay off and make its way through. So yeah, just to make sure you're aware that the RSS feed is being updated. And as a result of that, there may be a slight lag with a couple of episodes from last week. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, it's all been sorted and you're following me along. Right, that was a slightly lengthier intro than I wanted, but let's do this. We are going to take a short break. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear the trailer for Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance from 2002. When I return, I'll be joined by the phenomenal Liam Rafferty. And let's get into the first of what will be an interesting trilogy of movies over the next month or so. Coming right up, right after this.
Want to learn more about horror directors? With a lighthearted look at three of their movies? Meet fearless podcaster Gore Blimey.
I've been unsettled by bats in the past and startled by parrots, and I've even been known to jump at the odd cockatoo.
discover horror films that are classics, and others too.
There's a topless aerobics massacre, an exploding rock singer, cannibals, nude martial arts, a deep-fried prostitute.
But it's not all silliness. You'll get proper movie breakdowns, opinion, and background information too.
Yep, in the 80s and 90s, Jeff Stryker was huge in gay porn. In every sense.
So if you're a horror film fan, come and check out the Trilogy of Terror podcast at strangeanddeadly.com or find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or on your podcatcher.
One of those people that has a certain charisma and a certain style, and I'm just hoping one day he'll rub off on me.
The Trilogy of Terror podcast, where we try three times harder to give you the willies.
Welcome back, ladies and gents. So, kicking us off for this three planned episode series looking at the Vengeance Trilogy by Chan-Wook Park. We're starting off with Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance from 2002. Joining me on this three-movie jaunt, which is going to take about a month or so to get through. We're being very loosey-goosey with it, mostly because we're busy. I think that's safe to say. Is my very good friend and podcasting guru. That's right, he's a guru. You achieve guru status when you manage to stay calm and serene in the face of anarchy. And this man does it very, very well. He's one half of Scotland Liam versus Evil. He's, of course, Liam. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing very well, Duncan. How are you?
I'm awesome, man. We have basically talked the length of a podcast before I hit record. So.
It was all good. It was all good shit that you'll never ever get to hear.
Yeah, it was all scandal, gossip, rumor, innuendo, and the secrets to where the Aztec gold is buried. Apparently, Liam has figured it out with nothing but a compass and a map. Simple as that.
I impressed myself.
Have you been out in this new car yet? I don't know if people follow you on Instagram that listen to this show, but every time I see this picture of the car, I just hear like the most badass 70s metal riff.
Oh, I've been out over the winter. I've not took it out because I don't want to ruin it, and I had to change the battery in it, and we're now starting to do the interior, but I've been out in it a couple of times, and it is so fucking heavy on petrol. Like, I can maybe get home without having to stop and fill it up.
Just the give us some details here for those that maybe like Liam's got a car. He does have a car, yes, he does drive, but you splurged, you got yourself a little
I have a van. I have a camper van for when I'm camping and kidnapping. And obviously I then needed another car that I didn't need to use for kidnapping, but I would use for like post office and bank robberies. So I got a 1969 Mach 1 Mustang.
Jesus Christ.
Basically, if you've seen John Wick, see the car John Wick drives, it's that.
I've always said that you have a John Wick-esque quality about yourself.
Yeah, fucking amazing at jiu-jitsu, lovely in suits,
yep.
And can't act worth a fuck. I love John Wick, but Keanu Reeves, come on.
Yeah, oh aye. No, like, that's like from now on, for all time, Keanu Reeves should be given a role where he doesn't have to emote. because he can't. He's dead behind eyes like a shark.
He just has to punch faces clean in. That's all he has to do, and I'm fine with it.
I think we went to see the third one at the cinema, and within the first, I guess within the first 5 minutes, he kills someone with a book. And I turned around to Corey and I was like, "That this is the best movie ever."
They're so good. So I'm going to say, when I do the interior of the car, I'm just going to drive around in nothing but black suits.
Nice, yeah.
Or nothing. Because I've sold all my clothes to pay for the petrol.
That's what I thought you were going originally. I was like, it's a bold statement. Hopefully it's not an all-leather interior, because that's, yeah.
No, I don't think they had leather interior in the late 60s.
Ah, see, there we go.
There was a war going on in America, man. Vietnam was happening.
And they needed all the leather for guns? What was
happening? Yeah, I don't fucking know, man. I'm literally just making shit up.
It's okay, because the Americans won that war, so it's fine.
Yeah, not if you go to Vietnam.
Duncan, I've heard the other side of that story, and I'll tell you right now, it's not consistent.
Yeah, they have museums full of places talking about their mad celebration win over the Americans. Yep. The American imperialist pigs.
And to our American listeners, thanks for staying with us. we're staying at that side of the world here for the Vengeance trilogy. See how I did that? That kind of felt like I almost... applicable segue.
You've done this before.
Maybe. Allegedly. Potentially. But yeah, we are looking at the Vengeance trilogy. Now, first question for you is, before agreeing to do this, had you seen all three of them before?
I had seen the first and second. So I'd seen Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Old Boy. I have not yet seen Lady Vengeance.
Interesting. So Interesting.
So I shouldn't have admitted that when I've agreed to come on and talk about a series that I really love when I've not seen one of them.
No. But the thing is, though, like, no, this could be interesting because, like, my kind of hope was that there would be at least one title from the three that you hadn't seen. And I was actually kind of hoping it was going to be the first one because this is the one that I feel is constantly overlooked. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what, like, I understand why Lady Vengeance is as popular as it is. Because we're really, it came right off the back of Old Boy, and Old Boy was fucking huge, still is huge. This movie to me was, you know, is a thumping strong movie that I just don't think people necessarily always talk about. Even when they talk about kind of Korean revenge movies anyway, it always seems to be never on the tip of the tongue, and I'm not entirely sure why that is. But yeah, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance comes out 2002, but according to IMDb, it was 2003 and made its way over here. And it's based on a screenplay by someone whose name I won't pronounce, and a comic book by someone whose name I will also not pronounce, but maybe related to Chan-Wook Park, and I'm not being insensitive or racist in any way when I say that person's name also has Chan Park in it. So I'm kind of thinking maybe, I don't know. I don't know how these things work.
Hearing you say the names is the only reason I've agreed to do this trilogy, so you better start saying them.
Right, well, the cast has Kang Hong Song, Ha Kyun Shin, Donna Bae.
It's your Korean accent, that love.
Jae Yong Lam. That's terrible. Bo Bi Han. Surname, Bo Bi Han.
He's my favourite.
Bo Bi Han, that's amazing. Dae Yong Lee, Jun Bong Ji, Se Dong Kim. And I'm stopping there, sorry. That's the end of that. That's right.
That's more than I thought you were actually going to give me, so I'm fine with that.
An absolute fucking debacle. We have a synopsis here on IMDb, which is, a recently laid-off factory worker kidnaps his former boss's friend's daughter. You keeping up with that? Hoping to use the ransom money to pay for his sister's kidney transplant. See, this movie particularly is... so fucking tragic, it is unbelievable. There's a way where, see, American revenge movies are seldom tragic, right? And the movies are more, it's the revenge that the movie's predicated on. Mm-hmm. See, Korean cinema, it's just like, let's make everyone see the worst, gnarliest shit, and let's give them a bit of melancholy while they're at it, and then let's drop the fucking, you know, the gavel at the end, they make things like, they really have a way of the tone, the craft in the tone is just nuts. And this to me is the epitome of why I think Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance is like damn near a masterpiece, because it's so quirky in bits, and like the weird things they do, like we're going to have our central character's death, which at first you're like, well, that feels like a weird thing to do to that character, you know, it doesn't necessarily add anything to that character's experience until halfway through the movie where he doesn't hear the little girl drum, and you're like, oh, but that is that what, if that's the choice that they've made in order to have that pay off, then that is like so fucking tragic and so well crafted. And it's just all the way right through this movie, everything that is delivered in a quirky way or delivered for, which you would see generally in Western cinema as being something that's maybe just a throwaway element in a movie, is all tied up in this movie and pays off really, really well. And I'm just not sure how Chan Wook Park in his, what, third movie? Like, his first Vengeance movie, before this he was doing action movies, just manages to completely nail the subgenre 100% first time. And then not only that, he betters it. Oh boy, he's like, I'll just do it again and I'll make it even fucking better. It's insane how good this is. What's your... I mean, are you a fan of, like, Korean revenge? I know you're a fan of Asian cinema anyway, but you're a fan of Korean revenge movies, and how important do you think a movie like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance is, considering it comes out way back? I mean, this is... We are in J-horror territory by 2002, so The Ring's been out, The Grudge, Dark Wars, etc. That's all doing their rims. And then you've got the Koreans doing their own thing with these Vengeance movies.
I think it's really interesting, because when you look at like the American revenge films, there is the good and the evil.
Yep.
There's somebody in a black suit, somebody in a white suit, and you know who you're meant to be supporting in the revenge thing. This flips in its head, where everyone's bad.
Yeah.
These people are terrible. You feel sorry for one of them, but what he's done is horrible. And then you feel sorry for the other one, and what he's done is absolutely horrible. And by the end of it, no one comes out feeling good.
No.
And I like that. Like, the sadist in me likes feeling bad and terrible and sad.
Yeah.
And I love that about this film. I think it's, for it being his first attempt at like a kind of revenge film, it's insane how good it is. It's insane how good it looks. The shots in that are so simple, yet beautiful. All the characters feel so fucking real. Like, you're in the story with them. You, despite how horrible they are, you see their imperfections, and you then kind of see bits of yourself in it. And I think Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance is a fascinating piece of cinema.
Yeah, what I love about it is the kind of twofold approach to the vengeance part. So you have threefold, actually, when you think about it. There's vengeance against the people who essentially steal his kidney, make him pay to have his kidney stolen, which is fucking horrible. there's vengeance from the father whose daughter is kidnapped and, you know, dies. But then on top of that, there's a vengeance that's wrought upon him for seeking vengeance for that. So it's this kind of weird trifecta of vengeance, and it really leans into that old adage of, you know, when setting off for a journey on revenge, remember, pack two shovels, you know, one for the grave you're digging for your enemy and one for the grave that you're going to end up in. And I love that aspect, and it's all paid off really, really well. And there's also this kind of almost kind of Tarantino-esque quality in here when you think of like a movie like Reservoir Dogs and how that movie ends. Like, everyone in that movie is like, has their own agendas and has their own approach for things, and everything they do, even as trivial earlier on in the movie, sets up for what will ultimately be the end of that movie. And you get that in here as well. Like, from the moment, and it's probably worth just kind of going into slightly more detail on the synopsis. What we have is a guy who works in, is this, it looks like a some sort of industrial plant for making like screws or metal pieces or metal fixings of some description. And his sister is deathly ill. She needs a kidney transplant ASAP. She's on the donor list, but there doesn't appear to be any donors. And he has been working very hard, saving away the exact amount of money that he needs. and time is running out, so he foolishly goes to a kind of organ harvesting group, and they make him pay for the right to swap his kidney, which never happens. They essentially just steal the kidney and his money, and then his sister has found a donor, and they don't have the money. But he's seeing this girl who is part of this kind of anarchist group, who I love, because you don't really see the effects of how fucking crazy that is until really the end of the movie. Yeah. And she comes up with this great idea. Well, what they'll do is they'll kidnap the girl of his former boss's friend, and there'll be an easy target. He can pay for the money. It'll be a quick, like, one-day thing where the money will be handed over and everyone's happy. And they leave the little girl with his sister, who finds out what they're planning, so she kills herself. So, like, remember when I said this movie's tragic? It just continues to happen. She's the only nice character in this movie. She's the only innocent, are the little girl and the sister, and both of them die before the halfway mark.
Would you say that that's some of the vengeance, so the sister on the brother, because she kills herself after finding out what he's done?
Yep.
So is that her taking revenge on him for doing something so horrible?
See, I don't know. I'd like, to me, it's almost as if she can't live with the knowledge that if she does get that kidney, it's been born of something so insidious. Mm. And I don't know if it's her just acknowledging that, you know, this, if it's her trying to escape what inevitably is coming down the pipeline, which will be her brother is more likely going to get caught out because he's not that clever. You know, he's very easily manipulated in this movie. Or if it's a case of, you know, she doesn't think is, if, you know, the worst case scenario is even if they get the money, she will have a kidney in her stomach, which has been born out of being purchased by crime money. I don't know. The sister is in so much fucking pain. There is one of the most disgustingly fucking bizarre scenes. That's why I love Korean cinema, like Asian cinema in general, is a group of four guys having a wank whilst listening to through the wall. They're all doing different things, which is hilarious. One of them actually has a naked woman taped to the back of his body. One of them is feeling his friend's arm as a way to get like some sort of like skin contact, and God knows what he's thinking about while he's doing it. But they're all listening through the walls to what they think is a woman having sex, but it's actually this guy's sister in like the death throes of pain and agony. And it's so fucking twisted and so fucking wrong and so weird. And it's just one of those scenes that, you know, I don't want to be watching this, but then when I realise why they are doing what they're doing and what they're actually listening to, it just taints the scene even fucking further. And it's just genius level. You mean it's just absolute genius level cinema? Like, it's just, it sets everything out in a cringy way.
I thought it was weird because it was watching my childhood, like the four-way tandem wank. We all used to do that.
The Dutch rudder.
Right? Yeah, it wasn't just feeling the arm, you were actually using the arm to jack off your friend. It's all about teamwork. Teamwork makes the dream work.
That's what I've heard. Well, I didn't realise it was applicable there, but...
it's a great scene to open up because you are just like, what?
Yeah.
What is going on? Now I'm uneasy.
Yeah.
Now I don't know where this is going to go, if this is how you open it. And that's probably the only comic relief you get.
Yeah.
Because from then on, it is just a downward spiral into the deepest, depressing hole.
Yeah. Oh, the only real kind of moments of levity are when he's like spending time with the little girl. Because there is something very childlike about our kind of central kind of protagonist.
Yeah,
he has like the way he views things is very simplistic. It's very childlike, very trusting, and they get on really well. Ultimately, once he finds that his sister's killed herself, he takes her out to bury her. This is weird, but he's going to bury her out in some isolated area under stones. There's this weird guy who has like a physical disability.
He's like set of cerebral palsy.
Yeah, it's really strange, and he's walking around in the background, and it's not quite clear what he's doing, except, you know, he scares the living shit out of the little girl, who falls into the water, and she's screaming for help. Our central character can't hear her, so when he turns around, he realises that she's dead, and, you know, it's time to get the fuck out of Dodge. You know what I mean? He doesn't want to be there anymore. And we then kind of enter the second phase of the movie, which is this daughter's father arrives, and, you know, he wants vengeance, so he hires someone kind of off the books, a kind of PI enforcer guy, to track down the people responsible and take them out. And, you know, that doesn't go well. So every time we try and get any sort of vengeance here, things go wrong. And that, you know, that ultimately leads to the kind of anarchist girlfriend being killed, but sets her group of anarchists on a road for revenge, which will play out at the end of the movie. It's a fascinating thing. You touched on the cinematography, which, I mean, isn't as beautiful as you will see, what, less than 2 years with Old Boy. I think Old Boy's the following year. It's not as beautiful as the Old Boy cinematography, but there's something that really indicates how crowded things are and how the lifestyles. You spend 5 minutes with any of these characters, and you kind of know what their apartment's going to look like. You kind of know where they work, how that's going to look and how it's going to feel, and the heat of the situation. And what I loved about it as well is this idea of, regardless your kind of social standing or your class, the way things are regimented in Korea. So when you are watching them in the factory, when the bell goes, everyone goes for lunch at the same time. And then there's a scene later on in an office where exactly the same sort of thing happens. It's like, oh, it's lunchtime, so everyone gets up and goes for lunch at exactly the same time. You know, I love those elements. It's this idea that they're all almost cattle following exactly the same sort of procedures. It depends what your standard of living is denoted by your wealth. And everyone has like a similar like moral compass in this movie to an extent, maybe minus our central character, who, like I say, is a bit childlike. But the journeys that you go with them are all essentially mirrors of exactly the same journey. Like they all treat vengeance exactly the same, and it all turns out exactly the same. It all ends up exactly the same way, with death and violence and despair all the way through it. And I think that's the title of it being Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. Are you supposed to be sympathetic to Vengeance? You know what I mean? Or sympathetic to this character who makes every decision he makes in this movie is the wrong decision?
Yeah.
I don't know. For good reasons, though. You know what I mean? Like, at his core, he's just trying to help his sister out. He fucked up. Lost the money. He's trying to help his sister out. He's talked into something but she wasn't going to get hurt. And the plan was to drop her off, you know, and maybe we'd have got away with it, but still kidnapped. So,
but you still come out. You come out of this film and you think, do you know what? Just let bygones be bygones. Let's not go for revenge, because it's never, ever, ever going to work out.
No. And just what I love about it as well is like the end of this movie, the big kind of payoff of the kind of anarchists like showing up and killing those that have wronged their sister, is, you know, it's when you're watching, you're like, oh, right, so like violence begets violence begets violence. But there's that way where you're like, that, what a culmination to a movie. And then like an Old Boy, he's like that was first gear, welcome to fifth gear. It's so bizarre. Do you know what I love about this movie is how great the performances are?
Oh, see from the main boy, like, you would be fully convinced that he is deaf.
Yep.
Like, everything he does, his mannerisms, his facial expressions, his signing to the different characters, everything about him is so real that it's a five-star performance.
Yeah, I think
for most of the cast, but him especially really stood out as something excellent.
Yeah, I think he's, like, there's a... It's not just the authenticity, but it's the vulnerability as well. Like, you feel for this. It reminds me, like, see Christopher Nolan's movie Memento?
Yeah.
There's a point in that when you realise, when he, like, the way the narrative structure works backwards, there's a point where you realise characters are deliberately using them. And when you jump to that, like, 10 minutes leading up to a scene you've just seen, you desperately want to be able to tell him not to trust the people that he's trusting. Mm-hmm. And our main character is like that all the way through this movie. Like, you're like that, no, don't. You like, we can see when he goes to speak to the, like, organ harvesting people, and, you know, this woman needs, and he, you know what the worst thing is? Not only does he pay her, right, and get ripped off, but he injects her with the medication in order to allow her to do the surgery.
Yeah.
It's fucking heartbreaking, man.
It really is.
It's absolutely fucking heartbreaking. Because he sees someone struggling, so he goes and helps her, and she's, like, missing fucking veins. And shit like that, yeah. That's fucking horrible, man. It's so unsanitary.
There's the ones, just touching on the cinematography thing, and kind of heartbreaking, see when he goes to bury his sister.
Yeah.
And he's crossing the bridge. There's a scene where he has his sister on his back, and I was like, see if that was, like, a Japanese-style woodblock print,
yeah,
or a painting of just that scene. The way he shot it is stunning.
Yeah.
And it is like it's showing you early seeds of, right, this guy knows how to shoot a scene. What he's going to do next is going to be even more special, which it is with Old Boy.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm actually now quite excited to watch Lady Vengeance, because to me, there's no up from the cinematography in Old Boy. So yeah. I'm quite interested to see how he handles it and if it's going to stand up as well as Old Boy did, or if I'm going to be disappointed.
I think he's, like, to me, I think he's, like, I know sometimes I say this and people are like, oh, here's Duncan going on about another cinematic genius. I do think, like, Chanwook Park is as close to an auteur as you get, like, just, you know, like, working just now. Yeah. I think, like, when I look at his catalogue, things like, we say Old Boy, Lady Vengeance, but Thirst, I think Thirst is an absolutely fucking incredible movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, visually, it's like visual porn for a cinephile. And then Stoker, which was a movie that flopped, but I love so much. Stoker, every shot looks like a painting. It's like this Southern Gothic painting. And then The Handmaiden, which is, like, absolutely jaw-droppingly gorgeous to look at. And he has an eye. He has a way that he sets things up. Even his short for the kind of trilogy of, was it? I can't remember the name of it now. Three Stories of Terror, or whatever it's called. It's incredible. That one, the one with the piano. It's just like,
seen that.
Oh man, check it out. It's gnarly. It's gnarly. Fucking amazing. It's all done to classical music as well. Because he's a big fan of Shakespeare, and I think he studied philosophy, which makes a lot of sense to me when you see the weight of the stories of the vengeance. And, like, there is something very kind of almost Greek tragedy about everything, the way it's handled, and the weight of all those scenes are given kind of this really equal measurement throughout the way the movie's constructed. And I think he's a master storyteller and an incredible director, making movies, which I think, I mean, that's a saturated genre, like Korean revenge movies. There are so fucking many of them now, and there's about, in the time it takes for me to edit and put this out, there will be 7 made. That's amazing. And they're all fucking amazing. I'll be honest, I love them all, but that's their bread and butter. They do a lot of them and they're very fucking good at it. But his just seemed like a different level.
For how good he is, though, I bet you his parties are shite. Because he's so depressing and heavy that I can't ever imagine him having fun.
Well, it's the strange thing, to link it into something that you guys are doing over your show just now. You've started the book club. Yep. And your first book was looking at an S. Craig Zahler work. And S. Craig Zahler is currently working with Chanwook Park on an adaptation of, I believe, one of his works. I might be wrong on that one, but they're doing some weird combination of a kind of Western vengeance horror movie, which,
can you
know, you
imagine
all the stuff that makes me
how
happy.
Brutal that's going to be.
That's what I mean, like, everything about that sentence makes me hard as fuck. So I mean, you know, like, and it's a marriage between two voices that I would really be, because I think, like the closest you get to a Chadwick Park in the American setting is S. Craig Zahler, who does vengeance movies. All his movies are vengeance movies. Bone Tomahawk, or you know, Brawling Cell 99, or even Dragged Across Concrete, are all movies predicated on the, you know, our central characters getting vengeance or trying to get vengeance, and they end in a very Chadwick Park sort of way. Like, none of the main characters come out well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no one has a good day.
No one's smiling at the end, is what I'm saying. But there is, so to me, there's a weird sort of, a weird sort of simpatico between those two guys, that the fact they're working on a project together, it's going to be the most depressing, violent movie you've ever fucking seen, and I can't wait. I actually can't wait for it to happen. And the other thing I think this movie does really well is its score. Its score is beautiful. It's a really kind of whimsical, even with the nasty things that happen in this movie, it's not a harsh score. It kind of just sits in the background and just adds a bit of soberness to what you see. Specifically, you were talking about the scene where they cross over the kind of bridge so he can bury his sister. There's also a scene where he's going to have his kidney removed, where they have this incredible shot of them walking upstairs in an abandoned building, and the stairs have no banisters, and it's at the end of the, you know, this disused half-built structure, and it's mostly silhouetted, so we don't see much colour on them. It's mostly silhouetted as we walk up, and we labour that point of how many stairs they have to climb up. Like, lot, you know, that shot is replicated about 5 times of them going up these stairs, and the music that's, we know something bad's going to happen there, but the music that's playing is fairly whimsical. Like, in the background is, you're like well, no, this is the ominous, play the ominous music because we know something bad is going to happen, and he doesn't do it, so he kind of almost uses the music against typecast of where you would expect it to be used, which I think is clever.
Yeah, because it makes it more uneasy, because it's so jarringly different.
Yeah.
That you're like, no, play something that tells me how tense this is.
Yeah.
Like, I need to feel tense. What is this whimsical thing that's happening?
Yeah, all the way through it. Like, it's melancholy, I think, is the word to describe it. This kind of, like, weirdly woozy, sadly depressing, yet optimistic, haunting little score that just da-da-da. And Old Boys, once again, Old Boys very similar as well when we get to that. It's the score in that one is a masterclass. And I think it's one of the reasons, one of many reasons why the remake was not very good, is the remake is basically bow, you know, you're like, no, that's just, you're too on the nose, Spike Lee, step back. I think as well, the last thing I'm going to say is the actual, the use of the budget here, like, I think is really, really well done. This did not cost a lot of money to make at all. Realistically, according to IMDb, converted to dollars, it's about a $4 million movie, which is not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Even by 2002 standards, not a lot of money. But you feel like all of it is used exactly where it, there's no kind of fat to be trimmed here. It's a very lean movie where everything is, you know, done as good as we can get it, from the production design right down through, like, the casting, the choice of clothing that people wear, the composition of the shots. It wouldn't surprise me if this was completely storyboarded out, because it feels like that. Like, the fact that it's a comic book adaptation or a manga adaptation makes sense to me, because there are, like you're talking about, you could have that as a print on your wall. You know, if you saw it in a comic, that's how it would look. So that makes a lot of sense to me. The fact that, you know, this is a movie that, for the most part, has very minimal dialogue. There isn't a lot of discussion here. There isn't a lot of lines, and that's predicated mostly on the fact that our main character is deaf. But I love the way that when he does his sign, we get a, like, a black screen where it basically tells you what he said, almost like a silent movie would do that, you know, like where a character would talk and then you get those blank screens of what the character said. All those things, I think, add to it. It's a movie that is just a very tight, lean exercise in kind of despair and sadness. I genuinely do think it's one of those movies which is ripe for reappraisal. And if you've never seen it before, please do yourself a favour. I know, listen, no one is going to tell you not to check out Old Boy. Check out Old Boy. Old Boy's fucking amazing. But, you know, if you have the chance, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance has all the groundwork. It's the weird Rosetta Stone that really links a lot of this, and hugely influential, because after the success of that movie, and it was successful, you know, in terms of its critical response on festivals, it lays the groundwork for tons of movies that start going much more violent, you know, like hyper violent. But it's, you know, it's all there. I think it's really smart. And if you are like me, you bought that Blu-ray box set.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't buy the second one, but it's on my list of things to own. Did you get the super duper Old Boy collection, and then they just gave you those extra discs in there, or did you buy the box set?
I bought the one that it comes. It was definitely just meant to be Old Boy, because the box is the lift.
Yes. Yeah, I've got that one.
And then they've just threw it in. But I bought that, because that was released like 3 months after I bought everything on Blu-ray anyway. Because when we first talked about doing this series, I was like, right, I'll buy them all on Blu-ray. Be cool. And then they released that box set. I was like, well, now I have to fucking buy that. Thanks, Arrow.
Thanks very much, Arrow.
And then they brought another box set, and I'm like, no, I'm not dunking. I'm not buying that.
I stopped myself. I'll eventually be in the sale.
I think it's already there in my Amazon basket. I'm definitely going to end up buying it.
But... yeah, and there's no difference. The thing about it is like all it is they're individually packaged. There is no difference at all to it. It's exactly the same ones that are in your release. I think the Old Boy one's maybe a bit of a lighter on special features. I will say this, their restoration work is incredible. Because I have the Blu-ray box set, the original Blu-ray box that came out like about 5 years ago for the Vengeance trilogy. And I thought I would do a little side-by-side comparison of the two prints. And it's a lot cleaner, it sounds crisper, and it's a beautiful looking movie, these are the sort of movies that I'm happy that Arrow are like, yeah, let's do that. I'm not saying that I feel that movies like Edge of the Axe need like a 2K restoration. As fun as that movie is, and it is hella fun, I'm just saying there are plenty of movies like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, which you could be doing, and I would be happy if you did. So,
even when they restored The Ring, that looked incredible.
It's nuts how good that looks.
I'm generally excited for every time they're going to restore, like you say, a film like this as opposed to Age of the Axe. Generally excited to see how it's going to look, because The Ring blew me away. When you do side by side comparisons with that, it's a totally different film.
It's nuts. It's not like I think there's an art to doing it, and they have it like down. I've yet to see an Arrow print from more recent times anyway, which doesn't look like someone has spent years making love to the print.
This episode brought to you by Arrow.
They're used to it by now. I think there's just this, that it just looks incredible. I have not seen their print of Old Boy yet, and I am giddy, because I know it's going to look fucking nuts. And people will get to hear it when we record our next installment of this Vengeance trilogy. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on in relation to Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance you want to tag on to the end here?
The sign language sex scene. I have never thought sign language could be so sexy. who would think a sex scene where they're actually just sign language, you're like, put it in harder.
Yes. Yep.
Spike mass. That's the signing that should be happening during that sex scene, but it's not. It's way more romantic than that, and I feel it. I just want to talk about sign language sex.
Sign language sex could be, like, if you don't get the right sign, things could be going in places you don't want it.
I know, because you can only make a certain hole with your fingers, so how do you know what hole it is? Sign language sex could quite quickly turn into sign language assault.
Sign language molest.
But yeah, I think that's the only thing that we haven't talked about.
I'm glad that we ticked off the list, in fairness. You know, we do some Netflix, I keep calling them, I should call them Letterboxd grades, because that's what they are now, but it's force of habit. I'm willing to change.
I think since you've put out more content than Netflix and Letterboxd even has movies, I think it should just be called the Teapots rating system.
Maybe we should just say the Teapots rating system is 1 through 5. 1 is hated it, 2 is didn't like it, 3 is liked it, 4 is really liked it, 5 is loved it. We do 0.5s over here. Knowing that we're doing all 3 of the Vengeance trilogy, it will be interesting because we will order them on the last episode, what's our favourite, least favourite, etc., which you'll probably be able to tell maybe through the grades, although sometimes movies that get better grades are not necessarily our favourites. Where do you come in with sympathy for Mr. Vengeance?
A 4. All day long, yep. A 4.
I knew you had a 4 because I saw your Letterboxd grade.
See? I'm rubbish at keeping secrets. To be honest, I then watched it again for doing this, and I was close to upping it to a 4.5.
Yeah.
Just because some of the scenes, it is so well put together that... Okay, if you compare it to Old Boy gets all the critical acclaim. So you go right off Old Boy, and this isn't, I'm not saying this is my grade. If Old Boy is going to be the perfect 5, then this has to be 4. It's not really the case. This is just such a strong film that I'll revisit, but maybe once every few years, because it's so dark and depressing at times. Mm-hmm. I think if I watched this every few weeks, I would never leave the house. I would have such a hatred for humanity. it's a 4 all day long.
Yeah, I'm the same. It's what I gave it on Letterboxd as well. I think it's the fucking great movie that has that little room for improvement, which, spoiler alert, you get in the next movie. So, 4 for me. I think it's one of these movies which I think when people are talking about where to start with, you know, where do I start with Korean revenge movies? I would actually point them to Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance before I pointed them to Old Boy. Yeah. I think Old Boy is like the steroid version of this movie, specifically with how, you know, the reveals come in that movie. But this one feels weirdly grounded, like very kind of, there's nothing in here that I can't imagine not happening, if you know what I mean. I can imagine someone doing a botched kidnapping. I can imagine someone, you know, hiring someone to teach, because I have read stories like this in papers, not like all conjoined together as one giant story, but as individual incidents, these things are definitely grounded in reality. When we move to the next movie, which is once again based on a kind of manga, we go more into weird kind of comic book territory, in that you have to set aside some of your beliefs in reality, which makes it fun. I mean, it also is what makes this movie infinitely sad, is grounded.
Old Boy is the graphic kind of the comic book style, and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance to me is a bit like a seriously, seriously dark episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. Like everything that happens, you're like, don't do it, don't do it. You know what's going to happen. And then he does it, and it rolls on to the next thing, and it just like it's, the dominoes all fall.
Yeah.
But just there's no comedy.
Yeah.
It's just so dark. And I think that's, do you know what? That's a great description. Well done, Liam.
There you go. See, we'll take that. See, there you go. You'll be getting more of this great Liam commentary over on his podcast. Where can people check out your stuff, Liam?
Scott and Liam versus Evil.com, or on SoundCloud or Spotify or anywhere else that you can listen to podcasts. We're now down to 1 episode every 2 weeks because we're busy and I can't be listening to Scott any more than that. I've had to cut myself down to once every 2 weeks because he was getting too much for me.
Oh, he's some guy.
He's like a drug that I do not want to take. So once every 2 weeks, it might eventually go to once a month, and then I'd maybe just stop talking to him completely. But yeah, if you like nonsense, then head on over and check us out there. And thank you very much for having me on, Duncan.
It's not a problem. Always my pleasure. Genuinely, go and listen to Scotland Liam vs. Evil. Easily one of my favourite podcasts ever. And yeah, I was thinking in my head while you were talking, one day, our Facebook chat group will be published as like a memoir, and we will all do serious time in prison.
Yeah. Like, all of you, not me. I have no say in anything.
I don't know. Like you instigate a lot of them. So just saying. Love you, but a little bit of instigation in there. You will be back sometime in the next couple of weeks to sit down and go through some Old Boy. And I was thinking it might be cool for myself, yourself, and Scott to try and connect some point, because you know what it's like, it won't happen during the event, but connect either pre or post Fright Fest and just do something. It'd be kind of cool to maybe gauge expectation and then on the other side gauge reaction to how that goes. That could be cool.
I'm going to manage my time better this year at Fright Fest, and if it's something shit like The Black Circle, which was in your top 20,
it's a great
you
movie.
Maniac.
Great movie.
Absolute maniac.
Absolutely loved it.
if in the first 20 minutes I feel like the way I felt at the start of Black Circle, I'm walking right on out of there and I'm going to a pub. Life's too short to sit through absolute guff like that, so I'm changing up this year, so we should have more time to sit and film things while we're not watching rubbish films.
I love the fact that that's the movie you single out and not Finale, which was a gross fucking woman-hating piece of shit. Like, that's
some
the
those
one
are gross,
I would have
some
picked.
Of those are gross women haters, Duncan. Don't call us out for it. That's a joke. I am not a gross women hater. I love them, whether they're gross or not.
I love the fact that Black Circle got the vengeance. A movie about vinyl. You should love it.
The good thing is, you're going to crash at mine during Fright Fest.
Yes.
So if you want, we can also do a live stream of us doing a tandem wank in the spare room.
Yeah, Dutch Rudder. Dutch Rudder live stream.
Wait, can't wait now.
I can't wait as well. Yeah, you know what? You know what? We'll put a paywall restriction for the money shot.
Listen, that could be a Patreon itself. I'd pay good money for that.
Well, there you go. I'm making no promises to anything. No, totally going to happen, though. Totally going to happen. Right. Liam will be back for Old Boy in a couple of weeks' time. I'm going to take my final break. When I come back, I'm closing out the show right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been episode 215. We were looking at Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, the first of three planned episodes looking at the Vengeance trilogy by Chan-Wook Park. Hopefully you enjoyed that one. It was a blast chatting to Liam, who will return sometime over the next month to sit back down and go over movie number two. That's right, it's time to talk about Old Boy. Yeah, it's hammer time, so to speak, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, and nudge, nudge. There's a multitude of ways to check out podcasts Under the Stairs. As always, I say, come across and check us out on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to the feed and leave us a rating and a review. It's the best way to support us over there. You can also check the show out on Stitcher Smart Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, loads of places. Like I said, up front on this episode, the RSS feed has been updated and it's working its way through. So some of those feeds may have us a week behind on episodes, but hopefully that'll be sorted in the next week or so. If you're listening to this episode, it means it has been sorted, so that's good news. At least that you need do nothing, dear listeners. Make sure you subscribe to that Teapots Collective feed, that way you can get the upcoming episode of Opera Omnia on Friday. Looking forward to that one, myself and Mr. Watson talking about Kill List and getting all nitty gritty in that detail in ways that make me feel incredibly happy. So yeah, that episode can only be listened to by subscribing to the Teapots Collective feed at all the places that you would usually subscribe or listen to podcasts. Teapots Collective, make sure you're on that. Come across to our website, it's teapotscast.com. That's the website for the collective. You can check out all the shows available over there. And if you want to support this show by buying merch like posters or pins, we're down to limited numbers now. You can do it by going to teapotscast.bigcartel.com. Visit our Facebook group page for the podcast Under the Stairs at facebook.com/groups/teapotscast. It's the horror community that you want to be part of. We're all chatting about all things horror and all things podcast Under the Stairs. Alternatively, if you'll want to know when the shows are dropping for this and the Teapots Collective, and occasionally check out live streams of myself, you can do that by visiting facebook.com/teapotscast. You can interact with myself and the Baz on the twin prongs of social media sexiness. Instagram and Twitter both can be followed at teapotscast. And ladies and gents, check us out in that Flick Chat app for the collective as well. Our join code for Flick Chat is teapotscast. It is available free on Android and iOS. You can listen to the shows directly through there and then interact in a series of message boards, some for individual shows, but others for specific conversations that you want to be part of or create, because you can do that as well. You have the power to create message boards over there. That's Flick Chat, free and available on Android, iOS. Right, that's us done. I'm feeling glad that is Monday's episode out the way. We have a whole plethora of stuff to get to this week, and I'm looking forward to giving you it all. Tight. Sounded a bit seedier when it came out of my mouth than I expected it to, but I'm glad I did that anyway. Anyway, let's get out of here. Enjoy your Monday. Enjoy your fucking week. Hopefully it is awesome. Hopefully you rule it. You dominate it like the bitch it is. And until I speak to you again, wherever you are, whatever the time zone is, and whatever you're up to in this big bad world of ours, please take care of yourselves out there. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from under the stairs, and I am signing off.